Hey, Trey here. Two things. First, I'm not sure if you know it, but Us and Them was honored with 4 Associated Press Broadcasters Awards, including one for excellence in public service through journalism. Second, it's the time for the Spring Pledge Drive at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And if you value the work that our Us and Them team does in telling the stories about the things that divide Americans, would you consider making a pledge of support to West Virginia Public Broadcasting? You can call or text to 1-800-RADIO-87, or you can go online to WV Public and find the little red button at the upper right-hand corner. And when you pledge, let them know where you live and that you're a listener of Us and Them. Doing this would be a big help for our show and the other great programming at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And thank you so much. We are deep into campaign season. With just weeks to go, it's a time when elections can be won and lost. Hey, Trey Kay here, and from West Virginia Public Broadcasting and PRX, this is Us and Them, the show that tells the stories about the things that divide us. Learning how to be a candidate and to live with a statewide campaign 24/7 is something one West Virginia man understands. That's because he did it. And there's a documentary that followed it. It's called The Campaign of Minor Beau. It's something that I've been really kind of fascinated with lately.
Hillary's senator doesn't want to drain the swamp, nor is he okay. What is wrong with me? I know the struggles of living paycheck to paycheck, having to decide which bill to pay, and whether we have enough to support our family.
We're balling on a budget. Until people see this speech, then they start donating. But be sure, project and slow, and show a little bit of fire in your belly.
I will defend and not disparage the industries that are vital to the economy of this state. So long as an industry helps West Virginia workers, I will defend them from government overregulation.
My name is Beau Copley. I live in Delbarton, West Virginia, and I work in the coal industry.
You are from a rural part of West Virginia, and you don't really have a lot of experience with politics. What led you to this moment that we just heard?
Well, having the opportunity to speak to former First Lady and former Secretary of State, former U.S. Senator Hillary Clinton, apparently I became, quote-unquote, a political expert overnight. A lot of people wanted to know my opinions on things, but little by little, after meeting with her, we had a lot of national attention. We got to do several interviews, and everywhere that we went after that, we had a lot of people who said, man, you didn't just speak for the coal industry. You spoke for us. You spoke for our entire state. And so little by little, we entertained the idea of maybe running for office. And honestly, my wife and I talked about it for quite a long time. We prayed about it for quite a long time. And I just felt one evening, I felt like God was, he had put it in my spirit to say, you're in a covenant relationship, and I won't send you if she's not on board.
For people who might be hearing this who are not from West Virginia, can you describe the part of the state that you're from?
I live in the southwest portion of West Virginia. We're 20 minutes, 25, 30 minutes from the Kentucky border. We live basically in the heart of what is known as the billion-dollar coal fields.
And what's it like there?
Rural. It's very rural. Small, tight-knit communities, I would say, pretty well covers the majority of Mingo County. We don't have great population sizes, but we are very tight-knit communities.
How have people earned their living in Mingo County?
For the most part, the coal industry has always been a mainstay in Mingo County. You have quite a few teachers. You have quite a few people who are nurses and work in healthcare industry. But for the most part, coal has been the traditional backbone of Mingo County in southern West Virginia.
Beau Copley was a laid-off coal mine maintenance planner in 2016. He was part of a small group of voters who met with then-Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. The meeting came after she made comments about how her economic plan would affect the coal mine industry. Comments that would haunt her campaign.
We're going to put a lot of coal miners and coal companies out of business.
Hillary Clinton sparking a coal controversy in West Virginia.
Hillary Clinton is in hot water.
I really think that coal remark will go down as her version of Mitt Romney's 47% remark.
So when you first heard or saw in the news that Hillary Clinton had made that statement, what did you think?
Well, obviously it was, it was just a soundbite. It wasn't the entire thing, but that is the soundbite that I heard. And obviously, as being someone who was displaced, who wasn't currently working because of the view a lot of people have on the coal industry, it hurt. It stung.
In the documentary, we hear a little bit of a clip of people outside of the media, and they don't sound like they're really happy there in Williamson.
During our conversation, you could actually hear people from outside, the things they were chanting and I think lock her up, a lot of other things. And I actually apologized.
At that point, you thought she probably was going to win, right?
Yeah, at that point, it was looking more like she was going to win than Donald Trump. So, yeah, I was hoping that if it went that direction, that, it was something that would play into our favor.
So let's just listen here for a second how that unfolded.
When you make comments like, we're going to put a lot of coal miners out of jobs, these are the kind of people that you're affecting. This is my family. And while my hope is in God, that's my future. I just want to know how you can say you're going to put a lot of coal miners out of jobs and then come in here and tell us how you're going to be our friend, because those people out there don't see you as a friend.
When I watch that, Bo, it just seems really tense. How did it feel being there?
Having prayed and fasted going into the meeting and not having a clue of what I was going to ask her to start with, I kind of let the Lord give me what I needed to say. That was my prayer, was that he would give me the right words. But honestly, trying to look back without watching it, it was just kind of surreal. I can't really explain it. I just think he kind of put me in a moment and kind of put it on cruise control, and he took over. So,
Bo, I just want to be clear. When you were in that meeting with Secretary Clinton, you were out of work at that point?
Yes.
How long had you been out of work?
Roughly 6 months at that point.
Why don't you tell me what happened after the round table was over? What happened next?
We stood up and we were waiting on everyone to exit the room, and she stood up and she walked over to us, and we had a brief conversation. We talked about faith, we talked about religion, background of her family, and she made her way across the room, started talking to other people, and I turned around and I saw a someone with a pen and a paper. Said, "Do you have time for a question?" I said, "Sure." So I walked over, and little by little, camera lights started coming back on. People just started gathering around, and next thing you know, I had recording devices, phones, close to my face, people asking me questions just left and right. And eventually my wife said that Senator Manchin kept looking over and going, "Where's Bo? Oh my goodness, I'm going to have to save him. They're going to eat him alive."
Former coal miner Beau Copley.
Beau Copley.
Beau Copley.
Beau Copley.
Beau Copley.
Beau Copley.
Beau Copley, a coal mining celebrity.
I mean, when you got home, was it kind of like just wildfire and the phone was buzzing and ringing and everybody's texting you and hitting your Facebook account? I mean, is that what was going on?
The next morning, I was trying to tiptoe through the house and get my son ready for school and let Lauren and the girls sleep, and the house phone rung, and that doesn't normally happen at that time of day unless something really bad's gone wrong. And I ran to answer the phone, and it was Mike Biette from MSNBC. He's a producer and wanted to know if I could go on with Kate Snow. And I was just kind of dumbfounded, you know. So I took my son to school, and when I got back home, she said, "We've had people call all morning long," and it just kind of, it was just one thing after another, and we just tried to do the best we could from there.
Why do you think the question, the thing that you said to Secretary Clinton, why do you think it resonated so much in West Virginia and around the country?
I think it had a lot to do with maybe the way that I delivered the question. You know, there were a lot of angry people there that day, and I had a lot of people tell me I would have handled that a lot differently. And I was like, well, you know, maybe that's the reason why you weren't there. Maybe it's the reason I got the opportunity. But I think that I presented our case, I should say, in a respectful tone, but with enough backbone to it that she knew I wasn't very happy with possibly continuing on in the trend that, you know, the coal industry was.
I mean, speaking from my perspective, just watching the news clip, it seems like you got to her. I mean, she certainly had to think about your question.
You know, I've been asked a lot of times, do you think that her answer to, you know, you was genuine and real? And I think that it was, but, you know, she was a politician running for president of the United States of America. And you don't make comments about certain areas or certain regions and then go into that region and not expect to face those questions. And I think that while she expected to face a question about that remark, I think it kind of caught her off guard that it happened right there in that moment.
Bo, do you think that rural Americans with traditional values were overlooked in the 2016 presidential election?
I think that's something that Trump played to pretty well. He spoke to the majority of the people in this region when he talked about coal, and he talked about trying to make sure that coal came back and that he's going to do everything in his power, you know, for coal. That's enough for most of the people in this area. Now, there are other way more outlying concerns in this region. We have other issues, but for the most part, you know, that's what people were looking for, was someone who said, "Hey, I get what you do, and I'm going to get behind it."
And for that reason, did he get your vote, your support?
I think he got my support in general at first because he wasn't Hillary Clinton, which I think a lot of people might have voted that way, you know, that didn't like her or didn't like her stance on a lot of things. But I think he got my vote more for the fact that he wasn't a politician.
Bo Copley learned about politics and the system by running for the U.S. Senate. He has a clearer sense of the realities of Washington, D.C. and its political polarization. Coming up, we'll meet director Todd Dresner, the man behind the documentary The Campaign of Miner Bo. It's running on many PBS stations this fall. I'm Trey Kay, and you're listening to Us and Them. This program is supported by the West Virginia Humanities Council and the CRC Foundation.
Music lifts us up and brings us together, even when we can't get together in person. Mountain Stage brings you live performances on the air, online, and in our podcast. They remind you how it feels to be in a live audience listening to live music. This is Larry Gross, host of Mountain Stage. Find a link to our stations and our podcast online at mountainstage.org.
Two, three, four.
Hey, it's Trey, and this is Us and Them from West Virginia Public Broadcasting and PRX.
After Donald Trump won the presidential race in 2016, filmmaker Todd Dresner wanted to understand more about the outcome. So he looked for a way into the story, a way to understand more about the people he didn't know, people who voted for Donald Trump. What drew you to focus on Bo Copley as a documentary subject?
Well, a lot of what you've been talking about, and finding that meeting that he had with Hillary Clinton. I came across it about a month after the 2016 election in a New York Times article that was about Bo and some other people in his area. And as a filmmaker, who lives in New York and had voted for Hillary, and all my friends and family had voted for Hillary, and of course we had all expected her to win, I was looking for a way that I could respond as a filmmaker to this new era we were in.
And as a documentary maker myself, I tend to have certain subjects that I focus on. What subject had you been focusing on prior to meeting Bo?
Well, my last film is nothing like this film. It was about autism, which was inspired by my son's autism diagnosis. And it was about why autism is so much more common now. And I guess the common thread between that and this is just this idea of hearing perspectives from people on all sides of an issue, which I did in the autism movie to try to tease out how we might want to think about autism. And the thread here was for me to go meet someone who was very different than I was and see if I could understand and empathize with their perspective.
Why do you think that the question that Bo asked Secretary Clinton, why do you think it resonated so much?
You don't see that kind of raw emotion that Bo showed in those kinds of meetings very often. And this was something that someone said in the film, Amy Chozick from the New York Times, who was following the Clinton campaign, that when they were at these events, the reporters would have an eye on them and an eye on their phones or their laptops because they sort of knew what was going to happen. And that when Bo started talking, everybody sort of sat up and paid attention. And I think it was that authenticity and rawness and genuine emotion that he showed, and that went on, I think, to be his biggest strength of his campaign when he was running for Senate, that authenticity.
In your documentary, you play the brief clip that we saw over and over again, which is, we're going to put a lot of coal miners out of work. And then you also take the time to kind of pull that out a little bit and play the full context of the clip. What role did this play in your documentary?
It was actually a suggestion from an editor who saw the film, an early cut of the film, in which I had just played the clip once and played the full thing. And this person pointed out that Bo's experience of that clip was to only see the part that everybody else saw and not the full thing. So I separated them in the film. And I think in addition to replicating how Bo experienced it, it's also tells you a little bit about the media and how they are looking for conflict sometimes and not so interested in representing what her actual message was as creating some conflict, or creating, in some cases, actually wanting to deliberately misrepresent what she said. So I thought that separating in that way really helps get those ideas across.
I want to play the full clip.
We're going to put a lot of coal miners and coal companies out of business, and we're going to make it clear that we don't want to forget those people. Those people labored in those mines for generations, losing their health, often losing their lives, to turn on our lights and power our factories. Now we've got to move away from coal and all the other fossil fuels. But I don't want to move away from the people who did the best they could to produce the energy that we relied on.
But when we hear the whole comment from Secretary Clinton, it provides a different tone, a context that's missing when you just hear that little, you know, we're going to put a bunch of miners out of work. When you heard that full context, did it change your point of view at all?
It did to an extent, but for the most part, her reaction was that she was taken out of context, and obviously she didn't actually mean if we continued on the path we're on. To me, by saying we've got to move away from coal and fossil fuels. She didn't mean if we continue on that path. She meant we're going to continue on that path.
And she would say that because they believe that it contributes to climate change and that in many ways that it's a industry that seems to be kind of dying and not economical. And I guess I would like to know your position on that. Do you disagree with that?
One of the reasons why it didn't change my position was because we were hurting right then. I know that we have to move away from some things and we have to find a way to, but we have to find a way for us to do it in a manner that doesn't just cut off our funds tomorrow and then say, okay, now go find something else.
That it's a steep drop off for West Virginia is I think your concern. Do I have that right?
That's what I'm looking at is you can't say, well, we're going to completely go away from coal today and we're going to make everyone go to solar, which is going to cost you more to start with. Oh yeah, by the way, we cut your job. So now try to find a way to pay more for your electric bill on top of not having a job. Those kind of things. If you want to move away from it, I want to see viable solutions and say, well, this is the way that we taper off. And this is the way that we move to something else. And this is how it's going to affect you in the long run, but not destroy you in the short term to try to get you to the long run.
But going back to the short clip and kind of excising that from the bigger idea. I mean, it almost seemed as though she was really cold and calculated. We're going to put coal miners out of work. And she was actually, that's not what the complete statement said. And I'm wondering if by politicians or politicians' campaign people or the news media, for those who use that short clip, I'm wondering for you as a Christian, is doing something like that bearing false witness?
Well, it is. It's deceptive. It seems like every news outlet, every media source seems to do that more and more nowadays. You put a spin on things so that it plays to your crowd and it plays to your people and the people who watch your programs or watch your shows. And like I said, it's those kind of things that have made the majority of people distrust the media the most. A lot of people blame President Trump. No, yes, calling them fake media, fake news, those kind of things. Yes, it does play a part, but for the most part, we're not stupid. We understand when we watch media and we watch news and we see the way that they spin things, and then you see other camera angles and the way that things are manipulated. It's not the president that makes us see those things. We see those things on our own.
Can you tell me, like, you say in there that this is an atypical campaign. What was it that you were offering West Virginians?
Maybe a poor Donald Trump being a political outsider. I don't know. What I was hoping was that people would see me as one of them. You know, we elect these people to go and be our representatives. And I feel a lot of times that we're electing people who have no clue about how we live day-to-day life because they're completely different than us. They come from different backgrounds. They come from different circumstances than what most of us are. And I was hoping that people would see someone who was one of them and someone who had faced things the way that they did.
Let me play this clip for you.
There's probably not been a larger, more looming political image in West Virginia than that of Senator Manchin. And you have to find someone who's the exact opposite of him. These guys are confident in their own abilities, but when you have a giant that you're facing, you don't send a King Saul who's confident in himself and his own abilities. You send a David who's confident in the Lord God. I'm asking you to send a David to take on this Goliath. I'm asking you to send me. And my name is Bo Copley, and I'm asking you to give me the opportunity to slay giants, not only in West Virginia, but in Washington, D.C.
Where were you when you made that speech?
We were in Fairmont. Is that where we were, Todd? Fairmont?
That was the debate. That was the Republican Party debate before the primary. It was in Wheeling, I think.
Wheeling, that's right. I'm sorry. I don't know why I said Fairmont. It was in Wheeling. We had a GOP debate, and that was our closing remarks at the end of the night.
I thought that was the best single thing that Bo said, at least that I captured in the campaign.
Why did it resonate with you, Todd?
Well, I mean, it was his argument that he just shared about being a regular everyday person, but sort of dramatically distilled and bringing in the David and Goliath imagery and sort of setting up Manchin as the opponent, and all done very concisely. And you know, it was kind of a dramatic closing statement, which was on statewide television. So I thought it was effective.
Todd, I'm just curious, as a West Virginian who has lived many years in New York and who's back and forth and still has real strong connections to West Virginia, I know how people in New York look at people in West Virginia, and I know how people in West Virginia look at people in New York. And I think that you would probably know many people who live in Brooklyn who would not take well to somebody like Bo speaking so honestly about his faith. How do you feel about him when he's speaking about his mission and his beliefs and using it in biblical terms?
I know that Bo sincerely believes and is in God and is deeply faithful, and that strikes me as completely authentic and genuine. And so I never had any negative reaction to that. I think there are people discussing politics today who will say Donald Trump doesn't deserve the support he gets from evangelicals because it undermines everything they say they believe in. So I think what upsets people in New York is when is what they see as hypocrisy. And, you know, I think there's a good case for that. That is distinct, I think, from Bo trying to do in his life what he feels like God is telling him to do.
Bo, do you, when you were traveling around West Virginia and trying to connect with voters, were there people who were put off by you speaking about your faith?
If you're genuine and you're honest in it, I think a lot of people view it as just holding yourself to a higher moral standard than what maybe everyday people do. And I'm not saying that I do that. I'm just saying that I think that's the way it comes off sometimes, that if you have someone you have to answer to in a belief like God, then I don't just have to be accountable to myself. I have to be accountable to someone else.
Bo, as I was watching the documentary, I couldn't help but thinking, how tight was it financially for you? You were out of work. I think maybe your wife had some income, and you're basically trying to run a campaign where you have to crisscross the state to let people know who you are. How was it at that time?
It was tough, but you know, like I've said plenty of times before, you know, God provided for us every step of the way. Yeah, we had to cut back on some of the things we might have done going out, some of our spending and things. But my wife was a professional photographer, and she was quite good with her craft, and she just really took on a lot more jobs, a lot more opportunity than what we had intended or started out with.
But you had to cash in a 401k and pay a penalty on that. I mean, did the campaign leave you in a financial bind?
No more than we were already in before we started running. We were in a hardship before we ever ran. You know, we took the 401k out to get by. I mean, so we made that choice to you know, to get us by until we could figure out what direction we were headed. And so, you know, it wasn't the campaign that put us behind.
So you didn't win in the primary in 2018. How has your life changed since you ran?
I had to get a job really quick, really quick. It's kind of gone, my life has kind of gone back to what it was prior to meeting Hillary Clinton. You know, the documentary has had, it's added a little flavor and spice back to our life. You know, we've had question and answer sessions, and we've had some things pop up, but for the most part, my focus is on my family and taking care of what our needs are, and which is what most people, I think, around the country really do.
Bo, one of the most memorable parts of the documentary that just really kind of knocked me out was at the end. You know that you've kind of ended up, you certainly weren't at the top and you weren't at the bottom, but you didn't win the nomination. And you're talking to your campaign director and you send out like a little like note or some type of post on social media to let everybody know that it's over and that the campaign's over. And then in the back of, I think it's a church or a theater, it looks like, but there's your son and he's back there and you can tell that he's just, I get emotional just thinking about it, that he's just really broken up, and you go and you console him.
Don't do that. You hold your head up. Okay? I'm holding my head up. Okay? You good? You all right? You promise? You sad? Okay. It's okay to be, but don't let it drive you. You don't let sadness drive you. Okay?
Can you just tell me what that moment was like?
I think that pretty much consoling myself as much as I was him, you know. But it's a heavy burden. You know, when you've got a young son who you're somebody's hero, and thing that I wanted to do more than anything was just to make sure that, you know, he wasn't broken, and that he could see that, you know, regardless of the outcome, we did what we wanted to do.
And that you came through the campaign, I guess that in a way you did it in a way where you didn't compromise yourself.
I was able to walk out of it with my head held high, that I know that I was me, and I didn't let it turn me into something that I wasn't. I didn't think I was better than anybody else. We did what we set out to do. We obviously, we would have loved to have won, and that's what that was the main goal, was to win. But I wanted him to understand that, you know, sometimes life doesn't go our way, but you pick yourself up and you move on.
You know, the film is called The Campaign of Minor Bo, and obviously that refers to the U.S. Senate campaign. But in my mind, there was always sort of a dual campaign of Bo coming off a couple of years of unemployment and embarking on this race where he had no experience and no realistic expectation of winning, and this challenge for himself to come out of that feeling as he ended up feeling, that he had been himself and he had his self-respect. I mean, that I think was the other campaign, this campaign to like validate his own self-worth in a way.
Bo, do you think, are your political days over?
Depends. If you ask me, I don't think they are. If you ask my wife, I'm pretty certain she thinks they're over. We met a lot of good people. We met a lot of friends. I've met a lot of people in the industry. But I'm sure we went through this for a reason. I hope there's a place for someone like me to be able to run and to thrive, because, like I said, I don't like the options that we have a lot of times, and hopefully people would find me as a more suitable option.
After the primary campaign ended, Bo Copley found work as a warehouse tech with a coal mine. He orders parts and handles deliveries. It's not his dream job, but he's grateful for work that sustains his family during these difficult times. I was drawn to this documentary because it tells the stories of people who want to understand each other better. Bo Copley wanted Hillary Clinton to understand the reality for coal miners and their families. And he was curious if an unknown underdog could take on well-financed campaigns. And filmmaker Todd Dresner wanted to understand the West Virginians who would vote for Donald Trump. And through his documentary, we learn about the humanity it can take to run for political office, lose the race, and still stand for something important. You've been listening to Us and Them. Our team for this episode is me, Trey Kay, Kyle Vass, and Kate Smith. Special thanks to Todd Dresner for allowing us access to clips from his documentary, The Campaign of Miner Bo. And check with your local PBS station to see if this is airing at a place near you. Michael Lipton and Tristan Lozow wrote and performed the Us and Them show music. Mark Lerner designed our logo. Lelena Price provides us with images for the web. The marvelous people at PRX and West Virginia Public Broadcasting make Us and Them possible. So do grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the West Virginia Humanities Council, and the CRC Foundation. Us and Them was originally developed with assistance from the mentorship program at AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio. We'll see you next time on Us and Them.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
From PRX.